Welcome to the Numb Podcast. I'm Charles Chafin, still coming to you from Los Angeles, meeting with clients and talking to anybody who will listen about Numb. The weather's been great. It's been in the 70s and 80s for the most part. I've been in Los Angeles. I've bounced back and forth between here and Palm Springs, where it hit over 90 degrees in February. And the people here are happier for the most part. I mean, why wouldn't they be? It's in the 80s in February. Probably the most dreary month of the year on the East Coast. I can't really get past the traffic thing, though. I can't literally get past it. I'm stuck in it. You know, you get in your car and you sit in it or you drive or whatever for 45 minutes or an hour to get somewhere. And then you do whatever it is you're going to do. And then you get back in that same metal cube or whatever you want to, whatever shape it is, trapezoid, I don't know. And you go home. That's 2 hours every day. I have a hard time getting past that. You know, on the East Coast here, you know, or back east, you know, I walk around. Most people that live in the city walk around. They don't even have a car, or they take a cab, or they take an Uber when they need to. But out here in LA, it's, you know, cars are like a symbol that people take care of them. They do things with them to make them, you know, to differentiate them. There's a place down the street here that's a car wash that advertises itself as the car wash of the stars. Would you really go to a car wash because you think you're going to run into a celebrity? Like if you're going to run into Tom Hanks on the other side of a couple sprays of Armor All? Seems a little strange to me. Nevertheless, I'm glad to be here. Today, we're talking about digital fatigue. But before we go there, I wanted to mention a study that's been recently published. I got a lot of email about misinformation, and people have really strong opinions regarding misinformation and the COVID-19 vaccine. What a shock, right? You're sitting on one side or the other, right? You're either really strongly against getting vaccinated, or there are a lot of people that are frustrated with the people who have not been vaccinated. Very few moderates, it seems. So it's an understandable point. So people were emailing about it. And I came across this study from, I guess there were 7 different authors. Roy Perlis from Massachusetts General Hospital is the lead author. And there's a list of folks from both Massachusetts General, Harvard Medical School, Rutgers, Boston Children's Hospital, Northwestern University, and Northeastern University. And the study is the Association of Major Depressive Symptoms with Endorsement of COVID-19 Vaccine Misinformation Among U.S. Adults. So what they looked at was within 15,000 U.S. adults, the likelihood of people endorsing a false statement about the COVID-19 vaccine as it relates to moderate or greater symptoms of depression. It's a fascinating topic, right? And what they found was that people with those major depressive symptoms, which they discovered in an initial survey, were more likely to endorse at least one of 4 false statements about the COVID-19 vaccines. And of course, that meant that they were less likely to become vaccinated. And so there's elements there of, you know, we talked about bias recently, of negativity bias that would be part of that, right? And what's interesting about this study, I think it's fascinating from a lot of different perspectives. First of all, 15,000 U.S. adults is a huge number. So congratulations to this group for producing this great work. But the other piece about this, you know, gets into this element of how information then should be shared, right? And so it's about, you know, how we present that information to individuals and how we look at different, maybe different profiles of individuals in terms of how we share information about the vaccine. Now, we certainly have seen that when it comes to different segments of the population, whether it's relative to age or race or even gender. And now thinking about it in terms of individuals who may be more susceptible to misinformation related to depression. And of course, I think about the implications of this, which is beyond the scope of the study. But I think about that when it comes to all kinds of other areas, right? If you have a higher level of negativity bias and you're more susceptible to misinformation in other areas, that could lead to all kinds of different things, whether it's related to financial decision-making, right? Certainly elements of politics and whatnot, and a whole host of other things. So I think it's a really interesting study, fascinating as it relates to COVID-19, and that we're really starting to better understand not only that we need to be producing accurate information, and of course we need to be producing accurate information, but we also need to be thinking about our audiences and their susceptibility of inaccurate information. So the study, again, is Association of Major Depressive Symptoms with Endorsement of COVID-19 Vaccine Misinformation among U.S. Adults. If you're interested in that study, and I know a lot of you probably are, given your emails, I encourage you to check it out. On the other side, we'll bring the band in for a second. On the other side, we're going to talk about digital fatigue. This is the NUMB Podcast, and I am Dr. Charles Chafin. I've been thinking a lot about digital fatigue lately, maybe because we've all been experiencing it. I think it now is a confluence of two things. First of all, we have our personal use of our smartphones and the screens that are in front of us, and we've gone over that 100 times, and it's all over the book, you know, that we're, you know, 5 to 6 hours per day on our phones, and, you know, even social media is like 145 minutes per day, according to some sources, which is a full hour more than 10 years ago. So internet users are on social media a full hour per day, I'm repeating it for effect, than they were 10 years ago. That's a lot of time, and that's it's a lot of missed opportunities, as we talk about. The second thing in this confluence is this notion of remote work. So the average worker is spending around 21 hours per week in meetings. That seems exhausting. 21 hours in meetings. 21 hours of taking turns talking. Anyway, I won't go there. But, and a lot of those meetings are on Zoom or Teams or some other platform, right? You know, and that's a lot of time that we have in front of our screens. So thinking about that, you start thinking about, okay, well, what exactly is digital fatigue? Is it just that I'm tired because I'm watching Netflix at night? Well, it really is kind of more about our cognitive resources being depleted. You know, are you feeling more tired? Maybe that sense of malaise. Do you feel like you're not as creative as you once were? Is it tougher to sleep at night because you're, you know, constantly thinking about work? And maybe you're struggling even socially, whether it's on one of these video platforms, on a Zoom meeting or otherwise. And there's some really interesting work by Jeremy Bailenson from Stanford University's Virtual Human Interaction Lab. And he says that, you know, we exert a higher cognitive load on video conferencing platforms. That, first of all, the excessive amount of eye contact with screens that are larger than life, meaning we don't see people's faces that big when we're with them, can be far more taxing. We don't get as close to other people in real life as we do on Zoom, as he's saying, unless it's a really intense meeting. The stress of looking at ourselves is also a big deal. And I've written about that. We've talked about that in previous episodes that, you know, we're seeing a huge increase. I think it's the Aesthetic Plastic Surgery National Data Bank. They say that Botox has increased by 54% and filler treatments are up by 75% in the year, would be the first year of the pandemic. So that's a comparison of 2020 and 2019. So we're seeing ourselves on these platforms. And maybe this is FaceTiming too, right? For some people that are starting to FaceTime in their personal lives. But regardless of what it is, in this video conferencing platform, we're seeing ourselves in a different way than we do in front of a mirror. And that can be stressful. It can be stressful for anyone. I think it could be more stressful for someone who might be older. Maybe they're up for a promotion and they're older and they're right next to somebody who's decades younger. Think about the stress that could come from that. So it is stressful. If you're feeling it, this the element of digital fatigue, you're getting it from multiple places. You know, not to mention the fact, talking about the confluence of these two things, more often than not, and you all know this, maybe you've known everything I've said so far. You're like, well, I have digital fatigue. I'm going to move on to the next episode. Yeah, don't just delete the podcast. Just move on to another episode if you think this is redundant. But many of you already know this, that, you know, we have these, you know, these Zoom calls, these team meetings or whatever the heck they are. People are on their phones too. They're texting and they're emailing at the same time. So you've got this element too of multitasking that's happening as well. And it's obviously that's going to deplete our cognitive resources even more. So we're getting drained. Our cognitive resources are getting drained at a higher level. Yet we're really not, in a lot of cases, we're really not focusing totally on what people are saying. We're picking up parts of it. Or we're looking away from the screen because of the issues of our appearance or because it's just too intense for us or all of the above and all those different things. So how do we address it? Well, we talk about the first piece, you know, the social piece and how we can address all these different things. I think the piece of having an hour per day more on social media than 10 years ago, I think that's one of the most powerful statistics. I didn't write that in the book when the book came out. That's a new data point for me. I find that to be, we've been close to that, but now that we're over it, that's big. I mean, we didn't even start. I mean, we started at about 90 minutes or something like that in 10 years ago. But think about what's lost in that hour per day. So obviously, the first thing we could do is manage that. We've done that in other episodes. Going back to the Zoom calls or the conference platform, I should mention Teams, and I'm probably forgetting some other one. Somebody will email me that I forgot some other platform with a one-syllable name, like Pumpkin Seed or whatever these crazy things are called. Anyway, have 15 minutes where you have a break in your schedule. Instead of the meeting going an hour, it can go 45 minutes. There's a great book called Scarcity. I talked about it, I think, last year. And the authors escaped me. But if you look up Scarcity, you'll find it. It's a great book. And they basically just talk about this idea of we take whatever time is allotted within a meeting, and they talk about scarcity relative to a lot of different things, but specifically as it relates here to meetings, they talk about the fact that, you know, if you give somebody 20 minutes in a meeting, or if you give somebody 2 hours in a meeting, that's what they're going to use for the most part, right? So there are exceptions, but you tend to just get it done. And there's people that do research on meetings. I'll cite some of them. I'll put them up on social media because I do want to cite some of these folks. You know, but they basically talk about this, you know, there's a point, like a midway point in a meeting. where people basically in their mind, they go, oh, crap. The filter kicked in right at the end. Oh, crap, we're halfway through the meeting and we're not done yet. We got a lot to do. And the pace speeds up and people tend to refocus and they get it done. So, you know, my point with that is we're thinking about digital fatigue, then let's err on the side of shorter so that we have some more time to kind of recharge and refocus. Are there opportunities for us to engage outside of screens? You know, phone calls aren't the worst thing in the world. You know, if you're working remotely exclusively, there's a great element of just being on the phone. And, you know, especially if it's like a coworker who you have a good relationship with, it's not, you know, talking to the president of your company or whatever, you know, going for a walk. And while you're talking on the phone, just to get some air and not be tethered to your desk. So maybe there's an opportunity to do that if you're working exclusively remotely. I think the other thing is too, if you think about what your goals are and your objectives are, particularly as it relates to your work, you know, deciding when you need to have these platforms and when you don't. I do hear from people that talk about this, that basically say, yeah, it's been exhausting the past couple of years. And, you know, added to that, many of our conferences now are online. And there isn't that opportunity to network. And, you know, there's always this challenge where it's like, okay, well, I'm on Zoom all day. Why am I going to register for this conference and be on Zoom some more? So we feel that. There is an element of, I guess, atrophy there. And there's got to be ways that we can address it. So if you're feeling that, I hope that you will. I'll post some resources. I hope that you will think about how you can, going back to our thesis of all of this, how you can manage some of it without all of it managing you. I do want to share an email. Before we do that, though, you know I should probably mention, fame and fortune is a magnet. It can pull you far away from home. With a dream a heart, you're never alone. Dreams turn into dust and blow away, and there you are. Got to have a little California flavor there. So that is, let's see if you can think about what it is. All right, give up. Do you know The Way to San Jose? Dionne Warwick, 1968. Incidentally, I received a few emails about the song I was good at, lyrics I was going to share. What was it? What was it? It was Dirty. I want to know what it was. Well, it was. It was Dirty. It was Dirty by Christina Aguilera. I got as much interest about that as I did any of the topics related to the podcast. Need to think about that. You can get the Numb Podcast on Apple, Spotify. I am still on Spotify, Google Play, Audible, and wherever else you get your podcasts. If you do get the show through Apple, I really hope you'll leave a review. And I should also mention Tim Dolbear is the audio engineer who does a great job, because you probably noticed there's little splices. It's because I can't find something that I'm going to share with you all and we have to edit it and change it. I mean, so, you know, you probably listen to this and like, you know what, it's relatively coherent. You should listen to it in its true form. It's not even close to coherent. He does a great job making this appear somewhat respectable. And the music is written and performed by the great Jim Turito from Michigan, USA. I got an email from someone who tells me who they are, but then writes, do not read my name. Okay, I won't read your name. And they're coming from somewhere in Texas. No way we'll find you. We will not find you. We don't know who you are, and we don't know where you are as you are in Texas, USA. But this person writes, I just listened to your Instagram episode from last year. Yeah, one of our more popular ones. I say parenthetically, really struck me. And I went back to my Instagram page and reflected on what I had posted and was really surprised at the useless things I was sharing in the past. It has really made me think about how I'm using Instagram and other social media. I'm not deleting it all, as you suggested, but maybe less time would be a good thing. Well, thanks for that email. Yeah, you know, it's true. And some of it is related to, you know, I use the term attention panhandling a lot, you know, that we're just kind of wanting to get some attention. So we post this or that and we see what the reaction is. And, you know, if you recall, you know, that creates this kind of dopamine loop where we're revisiting that page and our investment, going back to all the social media time we're spending, continues to go up. So it's kind of an interesting reflective process that you're having there. Oh, can't read your name. I can't say your name. Almost did. That you're going through there and saying, you know what, is this really worth it for me? Which is great. And so congratulations to you on really thinking through this and deciding how you want to invest your time and time and attention. So thank you for the email, and thank you so much for sharing that process. And to me, that's exactly why I do this type of work, so folks can go through that process and decide what's working and what's not. And if it's all working for you, fantastic. If it's not, you know, you reflect and then try to make changes. And hopefully we've offered some suggestions relative to that. And that concludes this episode. And remember, if you're not where you are, you're nowhere. See you later.